Welcome back to Dating Games, a modern relationships podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and our guest this week is a trailblazing actress, singer, activist, and Drag Race star who has a new album that just came out called Moment of Weakness, Letters to My Lovers. It's part of a three-album trilogy inspired by our guest's relationship history. So to explore the messages behind the music, please welcome the icon who is Miss Peppermint.
Well, hello, Bobby. Hi.
Hi.
And hello, listeners.
I've been so looking forward to chatting to you, not just because you have a great voice for podcasting, but I feel like it's kind of the sign of a true artist when your perspective is one that I want to hear, irrespective of the topic. Like, we could be talking about drag, or I could be getting your opinion on, like, supermarket layout. I feel like you'd have thoughts, you'd have solutions for all
of it. Wow. I thought you'd never ask about the supermarket layout.
So should we start?
Thank you for that.
So any initial thoughts on dating off the top, or should we get straight into your dating story?
The thing that's so odd to me about dating is that it's so personal, mm-hmm. but it's so universal, you know? So, yeah, those are my thoughts right off the bat. But you lead us in.
Cool. No, I think that's a good place to start, though, because it's true. It's something that can be tricky to talk about and find the right words for sometimes. Even myself, I find that on the show. And yet it's something that we all go through. And it
Absolutely.
Would make sense
Hopefully.
If we had some kind of consensus on how to approach dating or some kind of way to learn about it and improve. And instead, it's just kind of chaotic and we have to learn through trial and error. And I try not to think about that too much because then it gets scary when you're like, oh, we're just making mistakes on each other in order to learn.
Yeah. I mean, even more than that, it seems like, at least in my experience and a lot of people that I've talked to, certainly with a lot of queer people who date in a world that's a little less supported by the mainstream, not only do you have to make mistakes, you have to be open for people to, in the very least, make mistakes on you mm-hmm. or, you know, be open to just getting hurt. That's just a part of it. Be open to the rejection and disappointment and even the swiping. If you're going to be swiping to start up a date or look for a date, you might be getting rejected by people that you know, think that you might be a good match with. And, oh, you know, we had a conversation or two on some dating app and we, oh, no, you don't like that? Oh, you're unmatching already? You know, like.
Yeah, sometimes it can feel so arbitrary. And you're like, if you can find a way where we can avoid rejection, if I can just go on dates with people that already know they like me, that would be lovely. And I think when I was younger, that's kind of what I did a bit more. Like, you know, when you're at school or whatever, a lot of the time I was kind of insulated because I would hear such and such is interested in you. And then I'm like, okay, that person feels safe to pursue. And then what came secondary was, do I like them or not? And, you know, so rejection is
a great place to be in.
Is it? I think it's a bit toxic, but I think that illustrates how scary rejection can be, that we'll find ways around it sometimes, even if it's like, no, me liking the person is also pretty integral here.
Yeah. Well, I guess I didn't mean to say that it was a productive place to be in. I guess I meant to say it's a place that feels like you might end up with the least amount of rejection, at least initially. Mm-hmm. But once you get to know each other, then there could also be even more rejection. There could be rejection at any stage.
That's a trap. I can realize I do, in fact, like them, and then they've changed their mind. So no avoiding it. And so who knows if your dating story you're going to share has rejection in, but are you ready to share it?
I am. It does have rejection. Ooh. It has a bit of rejection. You know, there was this guy that I'd been talking to online and texting sort of back and forth. And, you know, I keep going back and forth between, even to this day, should I, like, match with the person and then just, like, say everything I feel like I would ever need to say to that person over a couple of text conversations? Or should we just say, forget it, let's just meet in person and see if we click. And then the conversation, let it develop naturally. And I always go back and forth between those two. Like, do I really try to like vet this person and make sure if they know everything about me and I know everything about them that they could? over some kind of a text conversation or risk it. And there's like pros and cons to both, right? You know, like on one hand, I've been in situations where I've said, you know, this is might be unsafe. I don't know who you are. It's better for us to keep, you know, let me just feel you out. Let's have some video chats and some phone calls. Even though it seems like a lot of straight identified guys don't necessarily love video chats and phone calls, or at least not phone calls. They do like video chats sometimes, but that feels like the safest and most responsible thing to do is like vet the person and, you know, have a nice, long, drawn out conversation, try to get a feel for the chemistry over the conversation before meeting, before like wasting the time and getting dressed up and going down and meeting them. But on the other hand, then I start thinking, oh, what if we say everything we need to say and then we get up in person and we have nothing to talk about because we already said it, you know, because you need some, you should reserve some small talk for the first date. And so I always go back and forth between those two. But anyway, I had several conversations with this guy enough to feel comfortable. And so he came over and we were watching TV. We started making out, which is obviously what you do. Then the mood kind of changed. And he said, I have the body of a linebacker, and that he just wasn't turned on. And so he just left.
What?
Now, granted, this was like, must have been 10 years ago, maybe 15, something, many, many years ago. And I have not had an encounter like that since. I don't know that I actually have a body like a linebacker, but even if I did, then whoever I would invite on a date, I would try to make sure that they liked linebackers before they came to me. You know, I don't know. But that
I don't know, though. I don't think that's your responsibility. It's up to them to figure out what they like.
It's not. But and we exchanged photos and things like that. And, I mean, it is difficult to get a sense. Without being extremely explicit, it is difficult to get a sense of somebody's like size and shape, like of their body, how tall they really are, unless you just ask them, how tall are you? Or you see them standing next to something in a picture. And so I guess I don't have me standing next to other like things and in pictures, I guess. A lot of times it's like selfies in these types of situations because you don't want to like post your family photo. And so, yeah, that was like, I was so like invested in this moment and like trying to look pretty and have everything together for to meet this guy who turned out to be such a jerk. And he really, you know, to call a woman that you're going on a first date with to say that she looks like a linebacker is certainly not the most generous in terms of empathy. And so that was a difficult blow. I didn't date for like several months after that because I was just so like shell-shocked.
Yeah. You know? No, I think shock is the right reaction. And it's just so unnecessary to say that. You know, I'm all for people attempting closure. There's debates on how possible it really is, but at least attempt it. So sure, maybe you make an excuse why you need to leave suddenly, or you find, you know, you find some way out of that situation, which isn't, oh, here's a criticism of your body, now I'm out, is so blunt. And then, of course, the next day or whatever, you could send you a quick text and say, oh, I'm glad I met you, blah, 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 but I didn't quite feel the chemistry, but I hope you have a great week, or it was lovely hearing about such and such that you told me about. Like, literally the sandwich technique, something nice, never seeing you again, something else nice. Is that not the etiquette? Yeah.
I think that I don't think that's the etiquette. I don't think it says that in everyone's handbook, but that's certainly how if somebody approaches me on, because I feel like 99.9999% of the people that we meet these days for dating is on some kind of an app. And so if somebody does message me who I'm like definitely not into, and I'm just judging by their picture, I feel like there's no attraction, then I'll say the first thing I'll do is call them handsome. And I'll say, hey, handsome, thank you so much for, you know, the message or sending me whatever. It was really a sweet message. And then I just, you know, say, I'm not sure it's a match. And, you know, but thank you so much or good luck or like whatever the situation is. But I always try to like give them a compliment first so that it doesn't feel like I'm criticizing something they can't control, you know?
Yeah. Do you then find that they take that, though, or do a lot of people come back and be like, why? And then try and talk you around? Because I know a lot of women
have
that.
The majority of the people who, if I can remember, the majority of them have said, you know, thank you, no problem, and just kind of taken and move on. There is a small percentage of those people who will be like, well, thank you, that's really sweet. Are you sure I can't change your mind? Kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Or like, why? And they soon discover that I don't have that many more compliments left for them.
That's a very demure way of putting it. I love that. I'm also interested in what you said about like that tricky thing of deciding how much to chat before a date, because of course there is the safety element, there is the element of you don't want to get all the chat out of the way and then you only have the deep stuff left when you meet, because that can be a bit too intense. But I do also think there's a bit of a trap that can exist there, where you find yourself getting invested in somebody that's like a name and a photo in your phone, you know, they're still a stranger. And so, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like talking to them on the phone or something is a bridge to that, because otherwise you can find yourself invested in them. You can find yourself being like, oh, we have these things in common, we had this really funny chat. And then you show up on a date and who knows if they're funny in person.
Yeah. That's true.
It's a minefield. And would you mind sharing your perspective a bit on, because you mentioned apps, the kind of things you think about in terms of like safety in that environment? Because it's something we've talked about on the show quite a bit, of to what extent are the apps even safe for people, but particularly for women and even more so trans women to use?
You know, it is really interesting, because on one hand, you know, we're just, it's just another modality. And so like, we're just using these apps. It's just, it is obviously easy to misrepresent oneself on a dating app, on social media. And I do know that they're obviously taking steps and trying to implement tools that make things a little, I guess, more difficult to do, like sort of catfish people. Mm-hmm. I do like that there's some apps that will have, some dating apps will have a photo verification mechanism where you have to like verify your photo. And so, yeah, that does make me feel good, because then I was able to say on one dating app, none of them pay me, so I ain't gonna mention any, but on one of the dating apps that you swipe on, you know, I was really relieved that they ended up starting having like a blue check mark for verification, because then I made the decision, I'm only going to talk to guys who are verified, mm-hmm. you know, so if you can't, and I do say that on my page, so that like on my profile, so that if they're like desperately interested, then they'll, you know, at least have the opportunity to go verify their account just by pressing a button. But the vast majority of the people who don't verify their accounts are obviously people who don't want to verify their accounts. And then there's only a few reasons why you wouldn't want to verify your account. And those are the people that I don't want to match with.
Yeah, I wonder what it says about me, because I've not. I know certainly Tinder is one of the apps that has that. Have I verified my account? No. The reason is, I think, because I can't be bothered and I don't really use Tinder. But I guess, you know, that's the reason to rule me out anyway, because I'm not really on there.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, that's what I meant. Like, you know, there could be lots of different reasons, but any of the ones on the list for me aren't the ones that I would want like a potential partner. Yeah.
Send for me.
No, I'm saying, you know, but there's that's like the most, you know, innocent, I guess, of the reasons that someone would not want to verify. And then there are others that I don't want to verify because it's not me. You know, like there are some people who are actual catfish and sitting in some kind of an internet cafe asking people for their credit card information. And so, you know, I've had several matches with different guys over several years who, you know, who just were the sweetest and tell me right off the bat, I'm looking for a relationship. And they're like very serious about, and I want a woman who's ready to da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm like, oh, wow, you are standing out. Mm-hmm. And we'll have a little chat every day, you know, for several days, getting to know. It's mostly them asking questions about me. And then when we come into, you know, and there's like, I work in a military base. Okay. You know, let's talk. Oh, can I have your number? Can we do something, some other they want my number. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, before we do numbers and get off the app, let's utilize this new feature that they have on the thing. Let's video chat. So I can just see, we can meet each other. Oh, no, I can't. Oh, yeah, baby, I'd love to video chat, but I can't do it today because I'm at work and there's no signal at work. No signal at work. Well, how are you talking to me now? Well, whatever. And then one guy wanted me to buy him a calling card because he doesn't have signal at work, but he needs a calling card to call out. And he's not, I'm like, so you're not allowed to use your own phone? Like, you're on a dating app. We know. So like, you can't use it to communicate any further. And so though, obviously that person was a catfish, especially when I started like having more and more of them. And when I would call them out on it, they would unmatch me. Mm-hmm. And they're not verified, and there's no way to know who they really, really are. And the pictures of the person, they'll say like, I live in Times Square. I live in New York, but I work in a military base. But all of his pictures are like in like Europe, mm-hmm. you know, like. And so, in terms of the safety, it is really interesting because I have had guys who have, on the flip side, wanted to like if it was a casual sex sort of hookup. And they wanted to, you know, they were hesitant to like come over to my house or something like that because they thought maybe I'm going to like ambush them with people and rob them. There's like this sort of fear or fantasy, I guess, or thought that as a trans woman, I'm a sex worker. And that if I'm a sex worker, then I must have a bunch of pimps lurking in the corners that are going to jump out. And so that's the sort of... that's often put on me. And so I'll say to them, you know, it's really interesting. I don't happen to be a sex worker. If I did, I think our conversation would have been a lot shorter and I would have gotten right to the punch very quickly. But, you know, I understand your fear, but you should know. And I tell the person that statistically, I'm more in danger of you murdering me than me doing anything to you. And, you know, there's a very lopsided rate of murder in the trans community, and we're not spontaneously combusting, we're being killed by our partners, people we meet on these apps. And so you know, mm-hmm. then I can turn the tables on them and like make them become aware of, you know, just how serious the safety issue is for women in general, for anybody, because it's the internet, but definitely for Black trans women. And then they're often able to see that, okay, they need to shut up.
Yeah, because those stats are so disproportionate when it's people closest to you, especially intimate partners. And I just wanted to add to something you mentioned about calling out catfishes and them unmatching you, because what a lot of people won't know is part of the reason for that can be a sort of safety loophole within a lot of these apps, where you can only report someone if you have access to their profile, i.e. you're still matched with them.
Yeah.
And so not only are they unmatching with you and you're like, okay, probably was a catfish, it's almost definite because they're removing the option for you to report them.
Exactly. Because then if they get reported, they can't use that profile anymore. That they really didn't work that hard on, because their profiles are oftentimes kind of blank, other than I'm looking for a marriage, instant marriage.
Just whatever they think you want to hear. But I think even that can feed into it as well, because they're looking to filter for only the people that are the most gullible. It's the same reason why we get those email scams that are from Nigeria, and they're not. Yeah. The majority of scams are within the same country, because it makes it easier financially for them to exploit you if they don't have currency and, you know, land borders to deal with. And yet they're like, no, no, I'll come across looking like a catfish. Let's see who I can find. It's a wild world out there. And you also mentioned about like the things in general. So not just catfishes, but so early on meeting somebody, especially on an app, there can be this tendency towards, you know, what are you looking for? And you saying that you're looking for a relationship can potentially be perceived by that person as, oh, great, that's a tick for me. But you didn't
say... I never even say that.
...looking for a relationship with them.
I never do. Even though I am looking for... I want to be in a relationship. I certainly want to be in a relationship with the right person. Mm-hmm. So I'm just not looking for a relationship. I'm looking for someone who I can connect with, who is not closed off to a relationship. And I don't even ask that, like, what are you looking for? My rebuttal in, like, what are you looking for in dating apps is, you know, I'm not sure. But then I immediately ask, what are you offering?
I like that, just fully flip it on them. But is that not the most honest? You know, like, what are we looking for in general? We have an answer for, but what are you looking for out of this conversation? And what does this person need to know about your intentions? I don't know. It depends on your behavior. It depends on if I actually get to go on a date with you.
Exactly. It's like the question, do you like to kiss? Because, you know, on the more casual hookup moments, some guys will ask, do you like to kiss? And I feel like that's kind of a loaded question because, like, yes, I do enjoy kissing, but I don't just kiss everyone. And it depends on a lot of things. You know, your breath, your teeth, your face. Am I attracted to you? You know, like, there's a lot of factors involved in making the decision to kiss. Yeah. Yeah. It is the wild, wild west.
But again, it's that assumption that, okay, if you say yes, then they're going to assume, okay, she's going to kiss me.
Then that's permission. Yeah, then it's automatically, yes, that's a guarantee.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
And so, you know, if someone were to ask me, what am I offering? I think I'd be able to answer that right away, very clearly, you know? And so while it might sound like, if they're assuming that I'm a sex worker, they might guess that when I say, what are you offering? That I'm talking about like some transactional relationship, but I'm actually not. I'm trying to find out like, what qualities that do you possess that you would bring to a connection with someone like me? We're obviously attracted to each other because we're talking to each other and we're matched. So that's that. So what else is there, you know, other than looking for a good time?
Yeah. And I know that's something you talked about in your first album. You've got like a little voice note thing where you talk about words versus actions and that kind of like, why don't you show me what you're going to offer? Because they can be assuming all the things they expect out of you. We can build a whole picture of matching with someone and what do we see as our life with that person. Like, we can be so imaginative, and yet there often is that imbalance of what are we going to bring to the table can be less considered.
Yeah. And so it's, I don't know, especially, you know, it's probably a shock to, it always seems to be a surprise to a lot of people when I, in queer spaces and in LGBT conversations, certainly conversations with a lot of gay folks, that it always seems to come to a surprise to them when I say definitively that I am actually a straight woman. You know, I think that's something even for like some gay folks is like, oh, wait a minute, you know, to wrap their heads around. So when they criticize and generalize all straight people, then I'll be like, hold up, there's some of us. But it doesn't change the fact that I feel so disadvantaged to be attracted to straight men. Because it's like, who's getting the shitty end of the stick here?
Yeah, I have to admit, I sometimes have to like hold myself back if I meet someone who isn't attracted to men. Like, particularly if I meet someone who identifies as lesbian, and hold myself back from saying, oh, that's the right choice. Because obviously, like, I know it's not a choice, et cetera, et cetera. But there is a part of me that's like, oh, there is a whole section of drama this person is unlikely to come across. And, you know, that falls along gender lines as well, like the difference experience I will have on an app versus female friends of mine can be so vast to the point where I know this would technically be a form of catfishing, but I kind of wish guys had to go on an app as a female profile first.
To see what the situation is.
To see what you're receiving.
Well, they could just go onto a gay app, for sure. They could go onto Grindr, I'll say an app name. And in those situations, I know for a fact that there are obviously all types of people on hookup apps. And for someone who goes on to Grindr, a straight identified guy or a guy who's looking to connect with women, I know, because I've heard from a lot of them, that they feel very objectified and that people are throwing them dick pics and ass pics and all these different things. I don't know who your audience is. Hopefully I'm not cursing too much.
No, go ahead. I swear all the time. I don't know how not to.
And they feel very, they've mentioned that they feel like very uncomfortable by that. And I'm like, oh, well, now you know how some ladies feel. Maybe not everybody, but, you know, certainly on other apps where guys like cut right to the chase and immediately turn it into sex. And so, yeah, there's several queer dating apps and hookup apps or dating hookup apps or whatever. And when I go on, if a guy talks to me or messages me, I need to know if he's messaging me because he recognizes me from Drag Race or if he is attracted to me and want to like pursue something romantic. And that kind of puts the onus on them to like declare to the world in a world where with men are not declaring their love for trans women publicly in this little microcosm, it forces them to assert that they value trans women. And it gets them in the practice of, I believe, of at least putting it into their consciousness. Because the flip side, it's usually the opposite, where they naturally hide their attraction towards trans women and obviously feel some sense of shame around it. And that shame is, I believe, in part, what is responsible for the high rate of violence and murder against trans women at the hands of our partners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I can definitely see that. And part of the reason why I'm so delighted to have this conversation with you is because of how much you can distill these insights into your music. And I've heard you talk about breakups as a big inspiration for music. And I think that's very common. So do you mind sharing a little bit about where the music comes from?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't. I've had a few relationships, and each relationship that I've had has gotten better and better. And I don't know if that's because the times are changing, you know, with regards to, because, you know, being a trans woman, being a Black trans woman, it's a component to the makeup of the and the dynamics of the relationship. And a lot of times that dating a trans person does involve secrecy and shame and all of these other things that I think can be toxic to a healthy relationship, or at least the longevity of the relationship. And so, you know, I do see a connection, whether indirect or direct, between how society runs itself and the art that's put out that comments on that society. And so I do think when I was sitting around and just saying to myself, I don't really know 20 years ago. I don't really know that much music by out queer artists that are talking about being out and queer and their love and all these different things. And so I wanted to be able to kind of put that out there for young queer, young trans folks to like hear that kind of messaging. And I'm capable of love and I'm deserving of love. And I would love to be lucky enough to find someone who would be compatible with that. And at the same token, people who are listening to this, you would be so lucky to date someone who has walked the path that a lot of queer people have had to come through, a certain level of adversity and barriers to come to who they are. And I think going through that can provide a lot of life lessons for that person, certainly chances for a lot of growth. And someone who's done a lot of work on themselves and has had a lot of growth, I think, could be a very beneficial partner. And so that's what I mean by saying you would be lucky to have a partner like that. And so each relationship has gotten better. I don't know if it's because I have that mentality or the world is becoming more progressive or both. But my most recent relationship was with somebody that I met while I was out of town across the country. And we, you know, hit it off right away. It was supposed to be a one-night stand. It was, but then it obviously turned into more. He just never left. And we, you know, became very close and had a pretty good relationship. And I started to fall in love. And that lasted, the entire relationship lasted about a year. And then obviously we broke up. And so after that breakup, I decided to sort of jot down a few of my feelings, which ended up eventually turning into sort of sonnets and then ended up turning into songs and music. And I had so many of them that I decided to put together. There was a beginning and middle and end to the story. So it just felt natural to have three albums, a beginning, a middle, and end. And so Moment of Weakness is the middle of the relationship where, you know, it starts to crumble a little bit, and things like jealousy and resentment, and even though both of our bodies are here, our minds and emotions, there's some distance between those two things. And I wanted to put these stories out there in a very plain way, because I feel like for someone to hear a trans woman singing about her love and being loved, I think is revolutionary. Not that I'm a revolutionary, but just the notion of hearing someone who's had mainstream success sing about these issues in a very straightforward way, not a like Bob Dylan kind of cryptic way, but in a very straightforward way, I think is revolutionary. And I would like to hear more of that. But what's more important is for people to see someone else that they identify with loving a trans person, a trans woman, rather than killing us, because we see stories of us being murdered. But we don't see stories of us being loved. There's a quote by Cornel West that's really inspiring to me. He says, "Justice is what love looks like in public. Justice is what love looks like in public." And that really resonated with me, because I do think that the queer community at large, but definitely the trans community, is deserving of a little bit of justice. And that definitely calls for us being publicly loved. And I think that's the only way that people are going to get to know who we are and know that their lives, the enrichment that will take place in having a relationship, a romantic relationship, a friendship, any type of a human relationship with any more diverse people, people of different races, ages, genders, disabilities, abilities, and beyond, that is only going to make your life better, I think. And so that certainly applies to trans folks as well. And so, yeah, I wanted to sing about this breakup in a real way. And I think I achieved it. And it was very cathartic.
Yes. And I agree so much with all of that. And I think it's kind of a bit of a cliche to say that you have to see it to be it, because you don't have to look far in the queer community to see how many people are breaking new ground, including yourself, for example, your Broadway debut, just to name one. And yet what it is such a wonderful like head start, and maybe like a nugget of in that like privilege that you may not otherwise have access to be able to see yourself represented in a way that historically trans women of color haven't seen themselves and haven't had the head start of seeing other people's experience, other people's learning in relationships and how to apply that. And so I so love the mission. And something within that I'm keen to get your perspective on is how you find ways to explore the realities, the ups and downs of relationships, but not run the risk of romanticizing what is toxic, because you talked about how, you know, music can do that. We've talked about that a lot on the show, including recently with Bob. And I definitely admit to that. I grew up listening to a lot of music that romanticized relationship dynamics, or seeing movies that romanticized certain relationship dynamics that I then went on to emulate. And I at times use the music as a justification to win me round on situations I shouldn't have been in. So how do you find that balance?
Yeah, you know, I think the easiest way that I would probably stay away from the perception of romanticizing a certain notion is just not repeating it too much, you know, in terms of like, if I'm putting it all in a song and I have a song about it, I'll go in 100% on that. But then that's it. Like, I'm not going to do another song that is a follow-up or part two or kind of keeps that idea going. And, you know, I think it's good to have context around the song. And, you know, if it's musically speaking, you know, if I'm doing a moment, an interview or something, and we bring up a particular song, like I have a song called Best Sex, which is on the first album, which is all about, especially the video. My gosh, I like couldn't believe it. The video, the song was written because I was having you go through these phases where you're like only like, you know, Shakespeare writing poetry and hoping for romance. And then you're like, I'm going to go out and have sex with as many people as I can. And, you know, you go through these phases. I think that's very human. And so while I have gone in and out of that phase, I find a lot of the potential partners of trans women, the ones that I've met and the ones that me and my girlfriends talk about, are stuck in that phase. And so I would like to believe that they are like good people and have something to offer. I'm certainly not judging the fact that they like to have sex. But, you know, do they want to be a fuckboy, or is that just what the only option is? But the song is about, you know, having to go through a series of fuckboys in order to find someone who's not. But the video has me like having encounters with like 10 different guys. For some people, that's lost on them. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, wow, Peppermint really is horny. Like, that's the takeaway. And I'm like, no, I'm actually auditioning these guys to be more than just a one-night stand. But we have to get through this part. And they're not making the cut, you know, until obviously in the video, the last one does. And so, yeah, it is important not to romanticize sort of toxic behavior and toxic dynamics. I don't know, since music and art is all up to interpretation to some degree, it's difficult to have one method that will protect mm-hmm. us from any of that.
Yes, I think that is a very balanced way of looking at it. And I think you're right, the context is so important, because we can read things into it, and that's on us as consumers. Like, I have one track called Blood Sport by Riley Ritchie, which I listened to a lot during an abusive relationship, and that's what the track is about. And yet at the time, because I was in this situation that was romanticized, even though it was very unhealthy, I could resonate with the music and with how catchy mm-hmm. it was, and with the messages of it, in a way that I wasn't really examining further, because there were certain things I wasn't examining in order to cope with what was going on from the abuse side of things in that dynamic. Mm-hmm. And then I came out of the relationship, I can't listen to that track anymore, because now it's triggering yeah. something that I found really catchy at the time. Now I'm like, oh, this, everything that I needed to know was right here. This was the red flag, was listening to that nonstop. And yet, you know, and that's the thing. We can, the artist can have the best intention, but the public can twist it, even though I don't even think that song was romanticizing it. I think that song was being very honest. And yet we can still yeah. do that.
Yeah, yeah, we can.
it's an ongoing trap. And so to try and get some of us out of these kind of traps and patterns we can fall into, do you have a rule of the game you'd recommend? So something you think people could live by in dating or relationships?
Yeah, I mean, in general, my two things, that piece of advice that I try to give myself, and I just struggle to follow sometimes, is kind of goes back to what we had said earlier, just being careful not to get into a text relationship with someone mm-hmm. right away. Keep it varied and try to stay, I want to try to keep some spontaneity in this arrangement, this budding relationship, because I have certainly gotten to text relationships with people where we're just, they text me, hey babe, good morning, okay, I'm on my way to work. Hi, I just got home from work. Oh, what are you having for dinner? I'm having for dinner. Okay, good night. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Hey, babe, what are you doing? It's like that, but like there's nothing else. And then all of a sudden then the texts become less, more sporadic and less frequent. And then they just kind of stop. And then I was like, oh, you know, that's, I can't stand that. And so no text relationships, no relationships that exist only on text. And the second one is probably, you know, I learned this from a good girlfriend of mine who's also trans. When you show up on the first date, how, whatever it is, don't wear any makeup.
Ooh.
It's a good one. That's a tough one, but it's, I feel like it's so real. Because, you know, it's me, 100%. Here you go.
Yeah.
And then anything after that is an improvement.
Exactly. And it's nice, a nice bar for, I think, women in general to try setting, as much as we feel that pressure of like, okay, that we're trying to avoid rejection again. But it's like, I'd rather they decide whether or not they like how I really look now versus, you know, they wake up next to me and, you know, hopefully women still aren't doing that thing from the movies of like getting up, putting on a face of makeup.
Oh, we are. I've done it, you know, and I certainly haven't done it with anybody that I think is really, that I really want to really spend time with. But I've had some like hookup moments where I'm like, well, let me just sneak out of the bed and hurry up and fix my hair and do my makeup real quick and get back in bed. So that when I say goodbye to him, I'm still looking good.
But I think this is the thing, right? That the rejection, I can understand it. I can see it definitely. But I guess the rejection is worse then because you're further along. You know, let them make their mind up now and then set that bar where you set it. And then, yeah, turn up in a full beat and they'll be like, oh my God, you're even more attractive than I already knew that you were.
Exactly, darling.
I love that. And I want to, I had a different one, but I'm going to actually change mine because of what you said there that I thought was so key about not getting into text relationships. And I think for me, part of trying not to do that is like remembering your boundaries. And something I talk about a lot is like what I refer to as boyfriend privileges. So what things I do in a relationship that belong within a labeled relationship dynamic. And one of them is doing the good morning and good night texts. I have no interest in doing that before I'm in a relationship with somebody, you know, and I think that is a fair boundary to have because otherwise that's part of the trap. You know, there can be the trap of the false intimacy of we feel we know someone over text, even though we don't really know them in a general sense. And then there's also the element of how our behavior can create false intimacy as well. That if we're allowing ourselves to treat this person in a way we treat a partner, then of course our mind starts seeing them in that way. And so, yeah, a reminder of boyfriend privileges, girlfriend privileges, then friend privileges, however you identify, is one I find it's a bit formulaic, I find it helpful.
And even on the hookup apps, if I'm really in a jaded sort of frame of mind and like I'm not even trying to talk about no relationships, and if there are every single guy I talked to was like, hey, let's exchange numbers, let's get off this app, I'm like, no, numbers are for boyfriends. Are you trying to be my boyfriend?
I love it, because otherwise how
they
many
shut
numbers
that up, right? Then they shut, they're like, nope, okay, we'll stay right here. I'm like, well, fine, we'll stay right here.
Yeah, we don't need that many numbers in our phone. I don't mind admitting it to you. The other day I was scrolling through looking for a contact. I can't remember the name, but I've no idea who they are.
Yeah, exactly. Probably. Why are you in my phone? I don't need,
I don't need the admin of going through and deleting numbers. I can't be bothered with that. So we will wrap up there. Thank you so much for your time, your wonderful conversation.
Absolutely.
If people want to find the new album, it's part of the Letters to My Lovers series. This one's called Moments of Weakness. There's a previous one to check out as well. And then a third one coming later this year, maybe?
Yeah, the first one is A Girl Like Me, Letters to My Lovers. And then the final one, which is the breakup album, is called Validation, Letters to My Lovers. And yeah, that one will come out next year what year is it? 23? Yeah.
Oh, we've lost so much time to COVID. All right, well, we will wrap up there. Thank you, Peppermint.
Thank you so much, babe.
Thanks for listening.
You can support the show, get ad-free episodes and bonus content by joining our new subscription on Apple Podcasts.
This replaces our Patreon and it's slightly cheaper.
Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta,
with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.